Walk On Army, before we get into this episode, we got new merch. As you're listening to this episode on Thursday, or maybe you're catching it a couple days late, you have just under a week to get in on the new Washed Up Walk-Ons merchandise drop. We've got a fresh new look for the Hawks by a Million t-shirt. We've got a cap in there, tank top for the ladies, and then we have a fire tight end U, tight end university, George Kittle, Noah Fant, TJ Hawkinson design. It's a beautiful t-shirt. We're so excited that we get to collab with them on this one. We get to rep tight end U. Go to stores.teamelitesports.com/washed_up_walk-ons. You can run that back, or the easier way to find that link is to go to our Instagram or our Twitter at Washed Up Walk-Ons. The link for our merch store is in the bio of either of those profiles. Brand new merch. We haven't done merch in a while. It's not a huge drop, but there are a couple nice designs. Go get yourself some gear for Kinnick so you can look fire this fall when you're watching the Hawks. That's it. Now please enjoy this episode with Nick DeMarco. Episode 234 with Nick DeMarco. You guys have never been more in over your head than you are with this one. This one gets super nerdy on strength conditioning. Nick's the guy who we wanted to take over the strength program for Iowa when Doyle was out last summer. You're going to see why in a second. Just try and keep up, I guess. He's a smart dude, and he knows a lot. Let's have him. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, to episode we don't know of the podcast. Right now, I get the pleasure of introducing somebody who I'm at a little bit of a crossroads how I even want to introduce them. Somebody who is a coach forever and always. Once you're a coach, you're always a coach to me. A mentor, a friend, an inventor, somebody who I believe is one of the most brilliant minds in strength conditioning, a conversation that I've been really, really wanting to have on the podcast or off the podcast. Man, somebody who I really appreciated having in the program, somebody who really helped so many people in ways that he didn't even know through his friendship and mentorship. Nick DeMarco, thank you for coming on our podcast, man. I miss you. I love you. God damn, it's great to talk to you again.
Thanks for the overhyped intro there, but I appreciate it. I love all you guys, so I'm excited to be on here.
This is a Nick, you've done a lot of podcasts and I've listened to a few of them. Yep. Most of them are from the strength and conditioning, just that whole realm. Like, they've all been based on that, and this is going to be a little bit different because it's more of a, I mean, it's definitely going to be focused on training and that stuff, but I don't know what it is. And I don't know where you even want to start, Drake, or if you have any spot, because there's a lot going on with Nick DeMarco.
What was it like to balance the relationship as a coach, but also a friend? Because you know that all three of us did not only see you as a coach. Like, we could, it was just a different relationship. And what was it like to manage that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like a lot of coaches are like terrified of that sometimes, being too friendly with athletes. Like, they don't have to be your friend. They should respect you. The like cliche lines. But I think if you're friends with guys, but they know that you're a professional and that you do a good job in your job and you treat it as a professional when you're coaching, that you can have a balance between the two. And I also think if you develop really strong relationships, like, you're naturally going to become friends with guys, especially I was a really young coach when I was there. I still am young. So I think if you're relating to guys that are about your age, going through similar things that you've gone through, you probably should become friends with them at some point, naturally. And I never tried to avoid that. I think it was a good thing because it probably just creates more buy-in. I never felt like there was a lack of respect just because I was friendly with guys.
I think you were, God, what were you, like 27 when you were coaching us, or 26 maybe even?
Yeah, my last year, I was 26. My first year there, I was only 22.
Your first year there, you were still going back to play football, right?
Well, I interned there in 2014, your first summer, when I still had one more year of college football left. Yeah, so I was like 20 or 21 then, actually.
And you were strong as a bull ox, because I remember walking into the weight room and I'm like, oh my God, the strength coaches are way stronger than me. What the fuck? Like, what is happening?
Dude, he still is.
I know, but I didn't understand as a young kid that like that was going to be the case.
Well, I've listened to multiple podcasts and you started coaching while you, you interned, but you started coaching your own peers when you were in college.
Yeah, only because I went to a small school. Like nowadays, I don't think you could get away with that most likely, but going to an NAIA school, I trained a few teams. And then when our coaches went away on like conferences and stuff, they would give me the key to the weight room and let me coach some dudes up.
I don't even think at a small school that I think that says something about you and not just like your circumstance, because I don't know what it is about you. Like Drake said, we always considered you more than just a coach or a friend, but you also, there's just something about you that's like, I'm pretty sure this guy's reliable and he's going to get it done. And so, you know, here's the keys to the kingdom, man.
I hang out with my strength coaches all the time and tried to learn from them. Cause as soon as I got to college, I pretty quickly realized that once I understood strength and conditioning was a profession, that's 100% what I wanted to do. Yeah. So I was super fortunate. They all let me just annoy the crap out of them on a daily basis and hang out in the weight room far too often.
So then you came to Iowa, you interned, and then you had a gap between when you came back. It was just after you finished playing, right?
Yep. Yeah. So I went back, finished playing, and then came back to Iowa in January of 2015, right when the new weight room opened up.
Oh, beautiful. And why isn't Nick DeMarco still in the league, like pass rushing? Like what's the number one factor?
Just not a good enough football player.
You're a way good athlete though. Like you are.
Great athlete.
But are you now, can you lay stake to claim the best athlete in strength and conditioning?
I don't know. There's a lot of good athletes out there, but overall just pure athleticism, I'm pretty high up there. Football skills, not quite high enough.
Man, that's tough. That's tough. Hey, join the club, man. I didn't have football skills to begin with. I was really good at water boy. There's so much shit. You're now in the industry, and we've had conversations just you and me that have spanned multiple topics, but I've seen you post about it multiple times as well on Instagram. You post a lot of stuff about not only just like strength and conditioning specifics, but getting into details of how the industry works. And I would call you a trendsetter or someone who rides.
That's why I called him an inventor, man. He brought inventive shit to our weight room. And then once he moved on to Elon, he like made a new inventive way of training athletes' lower bodies to eliminate ACL injuries. Like that's some inventive shit.
Yeah. I don't think and he probably won't call it inventive, more as he's just willing to go there. And I'm, you know, cause Nick, you didn't invent, you know, a split squat, but why are you more than anybody else that I've seen? Cause I follow a lot of people in the industry. Like, why are you one that just said, screw it, I don't care about what traditional strength conditioning looks like. And for those listening, Nick kind of like rides the line of like, how can he be, you just explain it better. Cause it's.
Yeah. Well, I've always just been somewhat of a contrarian. Like if a lot of people are doing something, I'll naturally want to do the opposite just because that's who I am. Mm-hmm. But I think it just started with me and Weissman, who's just an absolute legend, as you guys know. We had really experimenting in our own lifts, like in 2016, 2017, just playing around with some different things. At one point, you know, we were squatting like every single day. And then we were like, you know what, screw it. Let's not squat at all. Let's just go single leg squats. Let's test some stuff with speed work. because we'd kind of gotten out of it and we're just being meatheads for a while. Test some different stuff conditioning wise, just always experimenting with ourselves. And I think it led me to kind of the idea that the back squat specifically was just a little bit of a waste of time. The Olympic lifts that I like love doing personally, I think are a waste of time. So the things that we do, I would say most people aren't doing consistently. Like we, you know, we did a lot of good single leg training at Iowa. Like we would do the single leg squats, we would do rear foot elevate split squats, whatever it was, but that wasn't a primary lift. That would usually be like your main accessory lift, stuff like that.
Yeah.
For us, that's a pretty big staple in what we do. And just continuing to test new things. And then I'm surrounded by a really good staff here that have pushed me and made me try a lot of different things that I wasn't accustomed to, just because everyone I had met had kind of come from the same train of thought. So just having the balls to actually test some things and not just do the exact same program 30 years in a row.
That's what I wanted to hit on, because you then move on from as a strength conditioning assistant at Iowa to running the program at Elon in North Carolina. And so you did all of those movements per se, or maybe a phase or a block yourself? Is that what gave you the confidence to say, okay, I'm the guy here, I'm the one who implements the program. If I just want to try this new shit for 3 months and it doesn't work, that didn't benefit Elon University football at all. Like, yep. Was it more so like self trial and error that gave you the confidence to go for it with 100+ football athletes?
For sure. Yeah. I've never done anything with our athletes that myself or someone else on staff hasn't attempted. And usually we've attempted it quite a few times, or a few different people have done it, and we have a pretty high degree of certainty that it's going to work well before we'll implement it. And really it's not just like Elon football, our whole staff, because I'm in charge of our entire sports performance department across all of our sports. You're going to see a lot of single leg training. And we do things slightly different than some. But it's a lot of things other people do. We just have a little bit different emphasis on what's really important to us and the way we go about it.
For those listening who we just kind of jumped right into a strength conditioning way back when all the shit happened last year. In fact, we had Nick DeMarco lined up for the Sunday that all hell broke loose in Iowa City with the program and Coach Doyle and the diversity issues. And I just remember the text from you, Nick. It was like, hey, man, I know we had a podcast scheduled today, but it's just probably not a great time to do it. And it was before shit had even really hit the fan. And looking back, that's the most understated truth I think I've ever seen. I don't want to get into, because that could be a fucking 2-hour podcast in itself. But going from an assistant who, as Drake mentioned, you were always very, I mean, you were into fucking.
Dude, you brought, like, how much was that pressure plate? You know, when we jumped off the box onto that big gray plate and then rebounded as quick as we could, as high as we could. And you guys, okay. Yep. How much you're bringing like $50,000 pieces of equipment into the weight room as an assistant, because you're so damn smart and like creating new methods. Like, that is insane to me.
I mean, some of it was lucky. Like Coach Doyle in a staff meeting, we had this one company come by, Sparta Science, and they kind of pitched why we should have their force plate. It was like a monthly program, and they were trying to pitch how to use it. And I just didn't really think, and none of us really felt like it was the right fit, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense for us at the time. And he just kind of left it up to the staff. Like, hey, if we can find a force plate, you know, for a decent price that we only have to pay for once, and we can figure out how to use it to where it's going to actually help, like, let's do it. So like, if I get stuck with any sort of challenge where I can have a little bit of autonomy and try and push for something, I'm going to. And so we ended up finding, I think it was like based out of Germany is where we bought that force plate from, and for a decent deal, and got it in plate. And trying to figure out, hey, what's really important. And it linked up well with when I was doing my like early PhD classes, I had been reading on, the RSI stuff that we started implementing, and just trying to think of what was the best way that we could really do it in a large team setting to individualize four guys. And I think it ended up being a super really helpful thing that we implemented during that time, and guys got a lot of good results out of it. And I think it was kind of a missing piece that we didn't really realize until we had the technology.
I was about to say, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but the programs didn't change nearly as much. There was not nearly as much variation until Nick got there. And then all of a sudden there was a whole lot of new unique types, like French contrast became a thing. And I don't know, I just feel like a lot of the training changed up when DeMarco got there shortly after.
Well, we were also in the beginner and intermediate cards too. The advanced cards where you're doing all the crazy stuff. But yeah, I would agree to an extent. Yeah, the training did get a little more diversified once Nick got there.
I know this. If we could have accelerated that, hey, back squat doesn't matter, whole concept, Tyler would have been a lot more comfortable in the weight room, okay? Because when the receivers and the DBs are racking up 405 and I'm at 90% and we got 275 on the bar, it doesn't feel great, all right? It's not great. So I would have enjoyed the single leg training or anything that was like anything weird. Just I'm usually good at. So that – but yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think to an extent, the reason that Nick is at Elon now and he's doing his thing and he's multiple people in the industry recognize him as like one of the leaders and pushing the envelope is probably the same reason that we started to see changes in our program.
Are you getting your respect, Nick? Like, are people giving you your flowers? Because we definitely push for it on this podcast. We're like, listen,
I think you guys are giving me too much respect. If
we were full on. We were Team Nick. We were about to have the shirts, DeMarco 2021 of new head strength coach at Iowa. Either yeah, you or really Joel.
We were pushing hard.
You and Joel were our horses for the race.
Joel is a fantastic coach. He would be much better than I would, just because he is.
Think that's true.
He is one of the greatest humans I've ever met, in the fact that he and I think Seth Wallace are very similar in the fact that they can just ride the shit out of you and you still really like them at the same time.
And their motors never stop. They're they just keep riding your ass.
They got some energy in those.
Also, Joel doesn't know how to count to three, but. And neither
he does. It just takes a long way to take.
I've never sat in a pause squat longer than if Joel was walking by the set. Come on, get in there, sit. Yep. Two. There you go. Stay tight. Stay tight. Three. Up. Okay. Well, that's all of my time under tension right there, Joel. So thanks. I'm done with my whole thing. Yeah, man, you are a horse, but like now you're down to Elon. And from what I've heard with you, like the situation that you're in, and maybe it's Division One base versus like you guys I don't even know what you guys are considered. What are you like?
Division One FCS for football.
FCS. So you're
just Division One for everything else. Like basketball, we're in the CAA conference, but like we'll play UNC, Duke, baseball, you know, can make the College World Series, basketball can make the tournament. So
it probably isn't even that, but it sounds like you have a lot more, and this is a problem in the strength conditioning world for those that don't understand it, is like the time commitment, and you have full autonomy, like over your schedule and how much work that you put in, work-life balance, if that's even a thing. And like, man, at Iowa, you're there. Like you're never gone. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that just as part of the industry as a whole. And like, I just don't think it's healthy as much. Like even the football coaches, it's just an unhealthy job when you're there that much. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I completely agree. I don't think it's just isolated to football. I think most sports or just like major businesses, people just work way too much. And I think it's more of out of the fear of like being outworked and just like insecurity most of the time. Like people think, oh, this group works 12 hours a day. if I work 6 hours a day and get the exact same amount of shit done, like, what's it matter? I probably have a better life because I'm actually healthy. I can have time to get a workout in, hang out with your family, like do the things that are actually going to make you happy and fulfilled. And you will be a better coach or better at your job if you have actual fulfillment and enjoyment outside of just working all the time.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that people are just overworked and completely exhausted far too often. And I don't think it's super sustainable. Like, worked Iowa for 3 years and just getting up early as crap. Like, I think my wife and I would get up like 3:30, 4 o'clock and go to bed at like 7:30. Like, if you have kids, that's just not an option. So I think I literally would have died. Like, I'm a person who needs 8 hours of sleep to function.
Yeah. I'm heavy into this. I don't care. Like, it's my, I guess not everyone's going to be able to do it, but in my opinion, getting into like health and just like the really hard to quantify levels of like not having stress in your life and being happy, getting family time, getting your workout in without having to rush it. All of these things that are like, are hard to quantify. If you were to look at like, oh, how successful are you? Or how like well are you doing in life? I just think it's like, I identify with that a lot. I work like 6 hours a day and I get a lot done. And then I have so much time to see my wife and to work out and all these other things, go and do whatever I want to do. And we give Kevin a lot of shit on here because he works like 10-hour days, sometimes more.
It happens.
Like 5-6 days a week. And so like Kevin's working probably twice as many hours as me in a week. And granted, in the one, you know, money rules everything. And Kevin makes a lot more money than me, but
Kevin got the cash now, Kevin.
But the thing is in my situation with a partner income and the way that we live our life, I don't need any more money. In fact, I'm making much more money than I truly base level need. And so I just see it as once you get to a certain point, like
it's a value proposition, you know. Yeah. How much of your life is worth how much money to you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think early on
the answer is different for everyone. And I 100% agree with Nick. You know, if you're working 12 hours, but you know half that's just running out the clock, then yeah, you absolutely are wasting your life. Me in my life, there is a damn near direct correlation. The more I work, the more money I make. So
right, no, and
I'm perfectly fine with working. You know,
how sustainable is the spot you're in right now though, Kev?
You know, being a guy who lives alone, you know, I have a girlfriend, but lives alone. I could do this for
as long as you live alone.
Basically. Yeah. I don't think I could work at this rate if I had like a wife and kids.
Yeah. For me, like as soon as we just knew that my daughter was on the way, my life definitely changed. And it's like, okay, if I can just make a base level of income that I'm happy with, and I've been fortunate that I can make enough money here that my wife, she's a nurse, she just works on call at night, so she doesn't work hardly at all, but she gets to stay home and raise our kids. I get to spend plenty of time with our kids and her, and we have enough money to get by. Like, there's no point to making more money or working more hours if it's not going to make you any happier. And it certainly wouldn't at this point. So I mean, it comes down to the person. But I think a lot of people just overwork out of just the anxiety of getting outworked and really just insecurity. Like if you're confident in yourself, you know, hey, I can come in, I can get the work done. And obviously there's different jobs. Like Kevin has to work more to make more money. But in football, I would venture to guess that if most people actually worked less, they would do a far better job.
I think so too. I think somehow it needs to be put across people's minds that like happiness, because that's what it is, right? Like society has just bred into us that it's like money is the main success metric. And it's like, you got to work, 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 work. If you're not, you're lazy. And it's happiness should somehow be quantified and like put above or put at the same level of.
And at some point when you're working, if you take a step back, you realize that you're doing all this work for somebody else's success.
Because a lot of time, yeah.
You're probably not owning the equity in your work. Your sweat equity is like a lease on a fucking Mercedes Benz, dude. It's not worth anything.
Yeah, if you guys haven't ever read Nassim Taleb, he has the book Anti-Fragile, and it lists like the three greatest addictions in the world. And it was like sugar, cocaine, and a 9-to-5 salary.
That's it. That's like incredible. People are
addicted to.
Everybody write that down too, because Nick is a fucking Nick is a bookworm and has read more books probably than the three of us combined and has incredible recommendations. So what was that one again, Nick?
Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb, which is
I love the name right off the bat. Yeah. People need to learn how to be anti-fragile.
Yeah.
Oh, it would be right up your alley. He has another one that's Fooled by Randomness that I think is a fantastic read for sport coaches, because we like to, and strength and conditioning included, we like to just make these like causal references, like, oh, this mm-hmm. happened because Drake Kulik squats 500 pounds. Like, nah, it probably didn't. Like, there's a certain element of luck. Skill is the most important thing to team sport athletes. Like, we try and chalk everything up to, well, we did this and that's why it worked, when in reality, there's a lot less that we know than we think.
Yeah.
How did you get to flip the script? You know what I mean? So like, did you read a bunch of like scientists literature about the different ways to change a joint angle to decrease? I don't even know. Like, how did you figure it out?
I mean, nothing's figured out. Otherwise, I wouldn't have anything to
read. Your Instagram seem figured out, bro. Like, if I'm watching from the sideline, this shit is figured out.
Yeah, watching running backs split squat 400 or 500 pounds is fucking incredible.
I think most people just underload single leg training versus it's a big deal to us. And most people's arguments originally was, oh, if all you do is single leg squats, you don't Olympic lift, you don't do back squats, you won't have decent vertical jumps. But today we had 11 guys jump over 40 inches of, like, I think 42 semi and skill athletes. It was an approach jump, not just a standing jump. But my big thing with the single leg was really just logic. Like, there were some research papers that everyone's big fear is like, oh, you get this huge hormone response from a back squat because it's heavier weight. Mm-hmm. And that's going to increase, you know, all these growth markers. And that's what you need for college football athletes. Like, hey, list any guy that came in small, Ike Butker, Cole Crosston, whoever it is, and has to gain weight. They can't do that unless they back squat. Like, that's, they have to have heavy load. They have to have this. But this one study I found, like, disproved that. And if you take, like, those guys who are long spines, long femurs, awful squatters, and you take their back squat max, let's say Cole Crosson, I don't know what he ended with, wasn't great, and you cut it in half, he can easily split squat that probably day one. If you do 2 reps on each leg, the load volume is actually higher. And so they were finding that there was actually a slightly bit more of testosterone increases and those growth marker increases in the single leg group versus the bilateral group. It was negligent. Like, the p-value wasn't high enough, but to me, that proves a point. Like, if it's even a non-factor, like, it's a win for single leg training. Cause like, a guy like Sam Branks, who's still on staff there, like, I think of him, Kluver, like, guys who just, like, aren't super strong through their spine and, like, for whatever reasons, based off their anthropometrics, don't squat well.
No. Hey, now. My spine is fairly strong. It was my leg strength, bro.
400-pound squatter, mobility. Shut the fuck up and let the coach talk.
It was my leg strength.
Stability was
never touched 400.
If you take Sam Brinks, who I don't know what his back squat ended up, but it was pretty poor. You're never actually training enough leg strength with the back squat, because most guys are going to fail because of some sort of torso leak, like spinal stability, something in that region. And you're just in a worse position when you're not stacked right on top. So if you can stack a guy's pelvis, neutral spine, and he can split squat 75% of what he can potentially back squat, you're going to get greater leg strength gains, which if everyone says, oh, we do the back squat to increase leg strength, then you're choosing the lower return on investment movement if that is all you're trying to improve. If you're trying to improve speed or power, single leg is still probably going to be better. You can go hand supported, move the weights faster. You can go with chains, bands. You can do all the same shit that you do double leg, single leg. And sport itself is asymmetrical and unilateral. Like, how often do you see a guy besides the start of a play as a linebacker or a running back in a both feet on the ground bilateral stance? And even then, it's not in a full squat. When you're running, when you're cutting, when you're an offensive lineman pushing someone, it's always asymmetrical or truly unilateral. So I think it just weighs heavier on what's important for sport.
And then, so have you tested the return on it? Like, say maybe whether it's like exactly sport specific, like your players are literally making more force at the point of contact or like through extremely heavy prowler pushes or what to like,
yeah, see. I was about to say, like, what metrics do you value in your program?
I'm genuine.
So the key metrics that we're looking at is not necessarily the weight room. Like, yeah, we want guys to get stronger on our main movements are when a guy's young is split squat, clean grip deadlift, RDL, front squat. And as a guy gets older, it will become split squat, trapper deadlift, rear foot elevate, split squat, a bunch of different variations. And then we'll still look at bench press, pull up, RDLs, single leg RDLs, you know, trying to train as heavy as we can on a single leg pretty regularly. But the key KPIs to us are vertical jump, approach jump, broad jump. Our skill guys do a triple jump test. So jump off two, right leg, left leg, land on two. So it's essentially a bound in between, which has a pretty good correlation to guys' sprint speed. 10-yard dashes, fly 10s with different buildups. So we'll have guys with a 20-yard, 10-yard, 30-yard buildup. They build up, and then we just time that last 10. If you can increase a guy's mile per hour or his, like, collision index. So we have one guy who's, like, 245 pounds, and if he can run 20-mile-per-hour average across 10 yards, he will have our highest collision index. So
collision course, index, dude. That's a fucking incredible.
And then for our jumps, we'll look at peak power and relative power as well. Just what's the total amount of power they can produce. And you'd like to see those markers continue to go up their entire career, not just, oh, he jumps higher, but he hasn't gained a lot of weight, or his vertical jump is the exact same and he's gained 25 pounds. The peak power and relative power, you can see some numbers start to improve there. So really it's the on-field stuff that matters a lot more. Are they running faster? Are they jumping higher? Can they move well? And are they a good person? Like, I think that's the biggest impact you have as a strength coach. You spend so much time with the guys. So just getting them to have really good intent to what they're doing, good detail to their work, and hopefully having fun while they're lifting is a big deal to us.
Can you imagine how much fun you would have had?
Interesting point that, you know, we've talked about a couple of times in this podcast, and a lot of people don't know, is that you're going to spend twice as much time with the strength staff as you are with any of your position coaches. Do you think that the strength staff should be more involved in recruiting these kids or not?
That's a tough question, because I think they should at the FBS level for sure. Because I think in recruiting, there's a lot of, you know, you're trying to suck up to these kids and get them to come to your school. And it's hard to get a gauge on how interested they actually are, when I feel like the strength coach typically has the best eye for just who has what it's going to take to succeed on a day-to-day basis. Like, there'd be guys that would come in for recruiting talk, and if a coach is talking and they're in the back, just like looking around, not paying attention, like, you typically know those are the guys that aren't going to do extremely well in a very intense environment with high standards, high expectations. Like, I think you get so enamored by talent. I think that it's helpful to have a third party kind of audit things who might not know as much about them as a player, mm-hmm. but just try to look more on the character side. But then even as a player, like, trying to project a guy, like, hey, can he become a 300-pound offensive lineman? I would say the strength coach and the strength staff are probably going to have a better idea of that than the sport coaches.
That's way true. Like, thinking about recruiting a player to what they can be should absolutely be put through the strength conditioning staff.
But the flip side of that would be you'd have to get paid a lot more if that is going to become a huge focus of your work, because that's extremely time consuming. But if it was like a final stage thing, like, as things progress. Like, you don't need to talk to every kid or look into every kid, but if a guy becomes an official offer type guy, I think the strength coach should have a huge impact on how things move forward from that point. But getting involved early on, I don't think it's necessary.
I have like 15 questions that have come up.
Before we say anything, how fun would it have been to be competing for a collision index number? Like, you know how we have all those competition numbers? Dude, if collision index is on that board.
I'm trying to think who's winning that. I think.
Dude, Amani Hook, Amani Jones.
Amani Jones.
Noah Fant or Amani Hooker.
LaShawn Daniels. Amani Jones.
Because he made so much and ran so fast. Yeah.
Marcus.
Wiseman?
No. Marcus.
Mark Wiseman would be really high.
Wiseman would have had a great collision index, but he was number 55. Oh my God. Marcus.
Collins.
Collins. Marcus Collins, dude. He was the definition of collision index. Holy shit. That needs to be a t-shirt. Collision index 9,000. I want to go back real quick. This is nerdy. So for the 8 people that are still listening to this, like the Wash Walk-Ons fans, if we don't get this deep in strength conditioning for a while, you can tell we're all pretty excited. Have you ever done the single leg either yourself or with a group of your athletes and tested like the traditional, let's front squat or back squat max you at the beginning. Then we don't touch that for the entire 8-12 week block. And then we bring you back at the end and see what did this single leg program do to your front squat or your back squat?
Yeah, we actually, my first year and a half, maybe even 2 years here, we didn't front squat or back squat one time. We were just single leg. We were trap bar. I didn't think the front squat was going to be necessary. And now I've kind of backtracked a little bit. I think it's really helpful for a young athlete.
Yeah.
More from mobility standpoint. It checks off a ton of boxes and it's just really general. Like, you don't need to get specific that early. So I think it's helpful. But at the same point, we're doing split squats. But so we hadn't front squatted for like 2 years and we came back and there was guys on the team who were like, oh, I've never front squatted this much in my life. And they hadn't front squatted for 2 years. Like, if you get stronger as a human being, you're going to become a better front squatter if you have the skill to replicate it. Same thing as, you know, people who advocate for the Olympic lifts, there's expression and there's development. If you're really strong and you're really freaking powerful, like a guy like Tristan Wirfs, Brandon Scherff, if you have the skill to perform the Olympic lifts, guess what? You'll Olympic lift a lot of fucking weight. If you are really weak and you have the skill to do it, you won't Olympic lift a lot. Olympic lifting is not going to develop the skill of power and explosiveness to the same degree as a lot of other things, in my opinion. It just expresses you have power or you don't. Like, the guys who can Olympic lift a lot, the guys who can vertical jump a lot, they're going to remain those guys. Using the Olympic lifts to try and increase those, I think, is a little bit of a waste of time.
So you really don't think about like a bunch of increased, like hip thrust ability, you know, like hip strength.
Explosive power.
Yeah, explosive hip.
Yeah, so it trains explosive power, but if you look at the clean, unless you're doing, like, we'd go from the hang and we'd catch in a power position, unless you're maxing out a power clean, essentially, to where you're catching in that high hip crease position with a very heavy weight, it's really not that ballistic of a movement. And ballistic would be like truly exerting force all the way through it. Most of the time you extend the hips, then you rebend the hips. You don't really get that violent of an extension because you're slowing down the bar to put it on your chest and catch it. Versus if you do a trap bar jump with the exact same weight or even more weight, you're truly accelerating through the entire movement. And then you stick. And so it's going to be more force up, more force down. You can do that with any variety of movements. And then not even just replacing the clean. Like, if you spend an extra 10, 15 minutes on the field doing really high quality speed work, like resisted chain sprints in a power zone, like 60% body weight load, 10 yard sprints, that is going to make you a lot more powerful and specific to the sport than a clean ever will. So it's not necessarily just replacing it. It's allocating your time a little bit more wisely, in my opinion. And like a trap bar jump can replace a lot of the things that clean can do to a better extent, but you don't even necessarily have to replace it. It's just taking that out of your program and focusing on other things that are a little bit more important.
How much do y'all wish we could go back to 18 and try this program all the way to 23?
Well, I would love, like I said, I would love to do the single leg program. So I'm in my own training, Nick. We've talked because I'm weak as fuck, and I'm trying to in the cross.
When he said a good Olympic lifter with no explosive ability, I wanted somebody to drop Kluver so bad, but I always do it. So I was like, somebody else will shit on him.
He mentioned how off most of the time. I don't know. You probably have a percentage on this, Nick, but I mean, probably in the 90% of people, your squat. You fail on squat at the top end of your ability or your strength because of your ability to hold the bar on your back, how you stack your mobility plus your stability, right? It's not even about how strong your legs are. But for me, I was one of the very, very few, maybe on earth, where my front rack position is elite. My back mobility through my thoracic and my lumbar is elite. My hip ankle mobility is elite. I can hold fucking 600 pounds. My legs will not stand it up. And so I would get so goddamn mad every time we back squatted because I could feel that inconsistency with how it is supposed to be. And it pissed me off. Not relevant at all. I am curious about the hormonal response, and maybe you don't even care. You've never even looked into this. And this maybe gets outside of the right, like what's right for athletes, right? I think the sport specific stuff, explosive stuff is great. Now that you're into CrossFit, and we're going to talk about CrossFit a little bit, is there anything to like the deadlift and like some of the best movements to create hormonal response? Like what is there any specific, like, should you include those in your training if you're trying to gain weight or you're trying to increase like muscle mass to the max? And I know that's not really your thing. You're not like a bodybuilder trying to do that kind of shit.
Well, no, but there's two different types of hypertrophy. You have myofibril hypertrophy and sarcoplasmic. One is going to just increase the size of your muscles. So you'll see bodybuilders who are just absolutely jacked, look like LaShawn Daniels, but aren't necessarily that strong.
Right.
Not that he wasn't, he was really strong too, but aren't that strong. They're just really large. And then you have your guys who don't necessarily look the strongest, like myself. I don't think I look like an overly strong guy.
Like that's you for sure.
Who can lift quite a bit of weight. And the biggest things you can do is you have to hit high percentage strength work. Like you need to be touching 85% or above if the goal is to improve strength. And the volume side of things is something that I think does help a ton just from a body comp standpoint. Like you have to do some high rep stuff if you want to look jacked. Like there's just no way around that.
Yeah. Yeah. Karen, 150 wobbles for time. Wow. Any questions for you guys?
Go, Kev. This is just for my own personal benefit. When you started personally split squatting, what percentage of your back squat were you doing that at? It was like 50, 60-ish? Because I'm going to start working this into my own training.
Same.
I would say probably somewhere around that. Like I remember me and Weissman at first, like the first week, maybe 225, 275, something in that range. And we were thinking like, damn, if we could do 315, that'd be really badass. And then realizing that that's actually not that impressive. Like a lot of people can do that pretty quickly. It's just one of those like paper ceilings. Like you think it would be really impossible to get strong. And as soon as you start training it, you get really freaking strong pretty quickly. But yeah, probably somewhere around 50%.
And you guys do hand supported. So you like hold onto the rack.
We'll do both. So the younger guys.
Take us through the progression where you start.
Yeah. So they'll start with just a basic barbell split squat. Except it's not technically a split squat. Like you could call it a reverse lunge, but it's not. I have bastardized it. So you'll set up in a split squat, like back foot staggered, go down, lightly tap the knee, but then we stand up. So you bring the foot through like a lunge just because you get good hip extension and it gets you a higher quality movement versus if it gets really heavy and you stay in the split, a lot of guys will like rock back and it becomes kind of a shitty movement. So we actually changed that after our like first year implementing them. But so the young guys do that. And they'll start with like all submaximal work for incoming freshmen. So we start with eccentric so we can teach it, go to isometrics, and then we'll let them chase a little bit of strength in season when it's like moderate rep range, like fives or so. And then our next off season, our older guys, they'll go back through kind of like we would do at Iowa at times where you'd have like a iso or eccentric phase to start the year, just from like a tissue resiliency standpoint.
Yeah. Don't guys like that, guys.
Guys love it. And then our older guys, that's where you've seen, they'll do hand supported and we'll actually go like super max isos and eccentrics. So we'll take a weight that they cannot stand up, but they can lower. And if you want to truly overload strength and get strong as heck, that's a way to do it, but it needs to be.
So you're saying I'm going to have to recruit my wife to help me in the garage gym now. Son of a bitch.
But I mean, we're all stronger eccentrically and isometrically. Like you can hold more weight at the bottom. You can lower substantially more weight than you can raise up. Mm-hmm. So it's just a way to increase the total amount of tension and total muscle contraction that's taking place. And so we'll do that early on with our older guys who are actually prepared to handle that kind of stuff. So that's probably the ones that you're seeing are the hand supported. And then they'll do hand supported when they get into their more power and speed phases as well, just because you don't want stability to be an issue. And if you're standing on one leg, you get a little out of kilt. Like it's easier just grab on with the hands and make it a little bit more violent movement. Our young guys will stay with no hand supported all the way until their junior year. And they'll go through barbell split squat, front foot elevated split squat to increase the range of motion, rear foot elevated split squat to increase overload on the front leg. And then they'll have some other variations mixed in, but that's kind of our
front foot elevated.
Yeah. So you'll just put it up on like a 12 inch pad. And if you're touching the knee to the ground, it just increases the range of motion.
I was going to say that is a glute and hamstring contraction like a motherfucker.
Now, would you find that probably strengthens your core and your pelvic region as well? Because I remember back in Iowa, we had like a year and a half where we had a bunch of guys getting sports hernias.
Yep.
Is that something you think helps with that as well?
I don't know. I think it's just so multifaceted. Like, if you get really strong on a single leg, I definitely think you're going to get more groin recruitment. You're going to get more hamstring. Like it's just going to overload that leg a lot more. And the core stuff I really think is more of just like, we do a lot of isolated work that I think a lot of programs miss out on. Like we'll do actual hip abduction, hip adduction, hip flexion, glute extension is like our accessory lifts with a split squat or with an RDL, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think if you check off those boxes, it'll help you a lot. Just because people don't usually have strong enough, those small muscles that are all around the hip is usually the biggest issue.
It's a lot there, boys. It's a lot there.
This is a sweet episode because I just found out how I'm going to get stronger.
Same, but also... Also, 90% of our audience
I'm not
is like,
back squatting ever again. So that's completely out of the it's already been out of the equation. But I needed to know how I was going to get stronger lower body without it. Because
I only front squat most. Well, not that's not true. But in CrossFit, you kind of have to continue to do a little bit of both front squat for sure, because you got to be able to catch the cleans. Wow, that's a lot.
Back
There's a lot.
3 days a week, bitches. Let's go.
I'm starting a 6 week Russian program, squat program that I'm going to try and up my squat by like 400 pounds. It's all I have to do. You have all these ideas. You're clearly smart as shit. You know, a bunch. Was it hard to coach and implement somebody else's program while at Iowa, Doyle's program, right? Not that it was like completely different, right? You're not just like completely on the opposite side of every philosophy, but was it hard to have your own ideas of how you would do things if you were the head guy while you were still the assistant coach?
No, not really. I mean, I think it was always in me that I knew as soon as I got into it, I wanted to be in charge. A year in, I was like, okay, I'm ready to take a director role, like probably overconfident, if anything. Mm-hmm. Always wanted to be in charge. Like that's just always kind of been my nature of everything that I do. I want to be leading and doing something and doing shit on my own terms. But I think when you're an assistant, or if you work for anybody, period, the best thing you can do is increase the value of your boss. Like if you make them really happy and you can provide value to them, they're going to hopefully enjoy having you work for them, and it's going to reward you long-term, and you'll just actually be a good employee. So I never had a problem doing the things that we did. And I mean, just honestly, like that program is better than every other college football program. Like there's a lot of people who train extremely poorly in the college football world. And Iowa football has been training at a really, really high level from 2000 on. And you can see that in the fact that they get guys who aren't the biggest recruits and they develop and they're always ultra competitive. And that's obviously a credit to KF as well, who's just a absolute stud of a coach. And
I thought Savage was coming there for sure.
Yeah, he's a savage.
But, you know, I think what we were doing was far, far ahead of what other people are doing. And there's some things that obviously I wanted to do just slightly differently. And that was really not figured out until the end of my time there anyway. I was just testing things and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I think if I was an assistant there when I had established the things I want to do, maybe some of those things could have got put in the program as well. Because I think your job, if you work with anybody, is to contribute. So I think some people, just because of what type of person Coach Hill was, like he's a intimidating guy, I think you're scared to let him down. So nobody would pitch ideas as often as I would. First, like you're just an advocate for your idea. If he says, oh, this is an absolutely awful idea, like, okay, fuck me, next idea. Like doesn't really matter. Like I'll just keep throwing stuff out there. First, I think some people just take stuff a little bit too personally. Like it's not your program. I don't have the right to say how everything goes. I'm just going to throw out ideas. And the fact that, you know, he always listened and, you know, was open to ideas and always wanted to try and push things forward made it fantastic. Like I could never complain. It was an awesome situation. I think we did a lot of things that all of us had tried to push for. We already did good things when I arrived. They'll continue to do good things. So I had no issues whatsoever. I think it can probably be tough for some people if you're polar opposites. Like if we agreed on absolutely nothing, like, yeah, yeah, I obviously wouldn't have enjoyed it. But if you're just trying to change 2 or 3% of the program that are new ideas that you haven't really validated, like you can't complain about that.
That's the ultimate response to like a Coach Doyle saying something to you. It's like, okay, fuck me. Just fuck me. You know what? Just fuck me. We'll figure something else out. We'll just go a different route. That's fantastic. Kevin, I think you had something. It looked like you did.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike.
Unplug your mic.
I'm going to ask him real quick. Nick, is there a strong enough?
Yes, absolutely.
How strong is that?
It's pretty subjective. Like we have our own rating system that we've tried to come up with, which we based off of the data that we compiled our first 2 years here, or like year and a half, and we had male and female standards. Yep. And really it just became, okay, if you reach this point, is it making you exponentially faster to get to that next strength bracket? Like you're not going to be fast, you're not going to jump high if you don't have a decent amount of relative strength. Yep. Like even, you know, Usain Bolt might have never back squatted, might not have ever done an Olympic lift, might not strength train hardly at all, but because of how often he sprinted, he's probably doing a lot of plyometric activity. He's doing something. He is strong enough relative to his body mass. And there's a lot of other things going into that. But Matt Ray had a research study, which him and Dave Ballou are doing a lot of really good things at Alabama football and kind of pushing forward the field and strength and conditioning. They came from Indiana, and his research showed, I think it was like anything after, I don't know why I have two completely different numbers in my head. It was like 1.8 or it was 2.6 times body. I think it was 2.6. Anything over 2.6 times body weight. No, it was 1.8 because it was way lower than I thought. It was less than double body weight. If you were like 1.8 times your back squat, like increasing that is not necessarily going to increase. It's not going to have a direct correlation to increases in speed or power metrics. So anything past that would be classified as strong enough. Now, obviously, there's still a time and a place for strength because that is just kind of your body armor and what can make you a little bit more resilient. But pushing for a stronger back squat, if you're already a 2 or 3 times bodyweight back squatter, is just stupid in the college football setting.
So do you take that athlete who is quote unquote strong enough and then just start emphasizing power, explosiveness, speed? Kind of take
exactly the, yeah, especially if it's like a missing bucket for them. Like if they're really strong but they're not necessarily producing on the field the same way you'd want them to, like they're just a combine warrior type person, then you're gonna go as far the other direction as you can. Without, you don't want their strength to become a weakness by any means, which it would take a ton for that to occur, but it's going to be a huge emphasis on power and speed. So specifically in season, we'll break up our athletes that are on the 2 deep card into a power, strength, speed program based off their needs, because you only get so much time in season to train. So we'll try and focus on what their rate limiting factor is and then make sure we're still hitting all the accessory stuff that's important for every athlete.
Perfect. And that kind of goes into my next question. We had a long conversation about this topic at a previous podcast, but how individualized do you think you can get with team sports? Because you have a limited staff and you have a ton of athletes. So how much can you kind of develop a program just for that athlete? Say, just take football, for example. You got 110 guys in the building, yet, you know, Iowa, there's 6 strength coaches. You know, obviously everyone's weights and loads are relative to their strength. But as far as developing the program from the movements they do and the loads they do it at, how individualized can you get it without, you know, like you said, you strength coaches having to spend 14 hours a day in the building?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is your staff size. Like for us at Elon here in the summer, we can get really individualized because we'll have 5 of us who work with just football. Because all we have in the summer is football and men's and women's basketball. And they're in their own weight room with their own strength staff, or one strength coach and then a couple interns with them. So we'll break up linemen, semi, skill athletes. Their speed work will be different based off of their position. Their conditioning and plyometrics will be different based off their position.
I got some questions about that one.
The linemen will be on their own training cards. So even if you're a foundation plus, advanced plus, the line is separate, and then the semi and skill is separate.
Okay.
And then we'll have our 4-tiered program of foundation plus, advanced plus. And outside of that, when we get to the end season, we'll have our multiple tiered cards, and then we'll get that rate limiting factor stuff. So we're bucketing them kind of power, speed, strength. So there's times where we might have
a good way
7 different cards going. Okay. But I think it's trying to bucket athletes, because you're not going to typically have an extreme outlier who just doesn't respond to anything that the rest of the team does. But I would say, especially at the FBS level, if you had a guy who's just an absolute freak and didn't respond well to training, but it was great at football, I don't have any fear of like completely individualizing something for one person if it was warranted. And I think like if you work in college basketball, which I've worked with our basketball team here in a few different stints, and Cameron Ring said he works with basketball here, does an awesome job. His is really individualized because he's working with a lot smaller numbers. And it's really the implementation. Like, yeah, you have enough time to individually program for 100 athletes. That wouldn't be that time consuming. You could break it down on exactly what they need as much as you could. The big thing is implementing it and implementing it well, because you're dealing with college athletes. So if they come in, you could have the perfect program on paper, but if they have no clue what it means and you don't have the coaches to coach it and teach it, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what we talked about too on this podcast. I think you bring up a good point, is like, you're going to have some variation, but it's, you know, at the end of the day, you got guys playing the same sport. They're all going to be within some realm with each other. I heard this saying one time, said that, you know, athletes are very different, but mostly the same.
Yes.
I don't know who said it, but it's like,
it's a good one.
You know, they're human beings. They're going to respond to, they're going to respond to training. So coaches talk a lot in your profession. Who are some of the guys that you talk to that you feel like are on the cutting edge? What are some of the stuff that they're doing?
Brian Hess is a strength coach at UNC And if you follow UNC football at all recently, they've been extremely, extremely good since Mac Brown got there.
Their running backs have been doing some serious damage, right?
Yeah, their offense in general.
An absolute stud. But Brian Heskey interned at Iowa back in the day. I mean, probably, I don't even know the time frame, maybe like 08 to 010, something in that range. I'm not for sure. But he interned at Iowa. That was his first ever job. Then he worked at Harvard. He was at like Sam Houston State as the head guy. He was at Army as an assistant, then the head guy. And they came from Army to UNC, and he does a fantastic job. He came and visited us last week. I visited him a ton of times, have a ton of respect for what he does. He does just a fantastic job. And I would say at the FBS level, him and his staff are doing as good a job as anyone. Outside of that, really, it's
that's him. It's him and Nick. It's just those two.
No,
it's North Carolina holding it down.
Within our own conference, and coaches from other sports that I've met. I'm not like trying to bash college football. I just don't think there's that many people doing a great job, really. It's a lot of old school, just kind of wasted time. But Mike Tucker at Villanova is one of the best coaches I've ever met. He's right here in our own conference. Keir Winnaflat used to work at William & Mary. I've talked to him a lot. Justin Lima's over at Towson. He kills it. And
Lima's obviously done that.
Doesn't run well. He has horrible pal mechanics, but he can probably teach the shit out of him.
Yeah. Mark Wiseman, obviously, if I have any serious consideration of something I want to do, go to him because he's just a legend.
He told us that his high school lifting was he would go into the weight room, he would go to every single machine and basically go to failure for like five or six sets, and then just eventually walk out once he touched every machine.
That would be cool.
Wiseman is the grittiest, most disciplined guy on the planet. Like, if there's a sliding scale of just the softest guy you've ever met to David Goggins and Jocko Willink, Weissman is just like paper thin right next to those guys.
Oh, God, fuck yeah.
but then Jordan Newsman on my staff, and then just the rest of the staff. But Jordan and I talk consistently. He does a lot of the programming for the football team. Just a super, super smart guy. And it's been a great guy to have on staff. Jake Niederman, who actually works at Minnesota football. Sorry. He was on our staff here. Just a great coach in general. So
hey man, really a lot all of the greatest coaches in the world, but they're still a bunch of shit bags, and that's okay.
Flecker.
But a lot of guys in our conference, and then a lot of Olympic staffs. So guys that work with basketball, baseball. I've typically had a lot more in common with those guys because I think they've kind of pushed the envelope a little bit more just because those coaches are typically hired to be a strength coach. And a lot of times the football strength coach is hired by the head coach to just be a meathead and not necessarily be a great strength coach. So I haven't related with them as much.
What, if any, or how much how much value do you put in the like associations or the accreditations out there, like the CSCCA or NCSA or any of those? What do you think they have a place in collegiate strength and conditioning, or do you think they're overvalued or have too much power, or what are your thoughts?
I think they're overvalued. I think it's just a money pit. Like, you still have to continue paying for your CEUs every year, and they don't actually do anything to audit programs and make sure people are doing a good job. If Drake today said, hey, I want to go pass my CSCS, and he just studied hard for 2 weeks, he'd go be a strength coach. Like, if my wife wanted to, she could go be a strength coach. So I don't think the requirements to get into the field are nearly high enough, but I would say the same for sport coaching. Like, your strength and conditioning is a little bit more important, in my opinion. Like, I think it should be a little bit closer to nursing and how firm the accreditation process is, because like Maryland and other incidents, there's been like deaths because of malpractice. And I think strength coaches should have a much tougher time getting into the field than they currently do.
Yeah. So say like someone comes up to you looking for a job and you see that on their resume, like, say, okay, this means nothing to me, or it's not on there. It's like, I don't care that it's not on there.
Well, technically NCAA rules, you have to have it. So be a college strength coach, you have to have either your CSCS or your CSCCA. But really, it just means you pass the test. It doesn't mean you're going to be a great strength coach by any means.
Gotcha.
Anything else, guys? I have a list of 10 other questions that gets into like six other topics, but we got
to feel like I've been hogging the questions lately.
So. No, we got to respect the man's time, and we already took him 10 minutes past. And he said before that he's feeling like shit. So
absolutely rough today. Yeah.
He's got COVID. He's got fucking...
I don't know. I think I might. Not feeling good.
He's got the plague.
Had a fever, some body aches last night. Wasn't good.
What was it like with Jake and Ben out there over the spring?
Amazing. Love those dudes. Yeah. That goes back to friends and coaches at the same time. Like, Gervas is my boy, even though he's a little bitch.
What little bitch?
Yeah, bro. Little bitch. Get on Gervas before he hangs pitch up.
I love him. And then
did you guys bond over Grey's Anatomy or something? What show did you
watch? Oh, yeah. Watched every episode. Still a firm fan in that.
Kev, you watched Grey's, didn't you?
I did, but
come on now. I sat there and watched you watch like all 20 seasons in your room. We're have to do another episode. There's a million things. You're into CrossFit now. Are you going to win the games or what's going on?
Absolutely not. No.
Come on.
Well, are you gonna make it to the games? Because I do believe that you said one time in Iowa you could do it for sure.
I do think I can at least make it to the semifinals. Yeah. Hopefully this year.
And yeah. I told you
I
that.
I think it's like the top 120 Americans, and I was like 330 last year, or North Americans. So you got to include Canada, I guess. And I don't feel like I'm anywhere close to how good I could be at it. So maybe.
Yeah, 100%. That's Nick DeMarco. And if you're still here listening, wow, good for you. We went through a lot of nerdy shit. I have, like I said, I have like four more podcasts worth of shit. We'll bring you back on at some point, probably after the season, because it's going to get busy for you. But thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure to talk to you again, man.
Again, listeners, not sure what episode this is, but we'll stick it in there somewhere. And that's it. Hope you guys enjoyed Nick DeMarco, one of the greatest minds maybe on earth. Much better than us. We'll talk to you next time.